Sports Talk New York with your hosts Mark Rosenman and AJ Carter. Sports Talk New York is a Players Point production. It's sponsored by Prince Associates, the company you can trust for all your insurance needs, and the law firm of Decorator Cohen and DePrisco, specialist in line of duty accidents. Here are your hosts, Mark and AJ.
And it's a huge thrill for me to welcome our next guest, because he's one of those guys on my bucket list. He's perhaps known best as the play-by-play voice for my beloved New York Rangers games on MSG. He's inducted into the National Jewish Sports Hall of Fame. Aside from Ranger telecasts, he's also heard on Sunday NFL games and for Fox. He's done it all. He's been some of his other duties have included a studio host for the New York Knicks basketball telecast on MSG, a run at ESPN from 79 to 1988, calling a variety of sports for the network, including hockey, boxing, and table tennis. He's handled play-by-play for the NHL radio. He's called the Stanley Cup playoffs on radio for many years, as well as the 2002-2006 Winter Olympics men's hockey tournaments. He calls preseason NFL games for Chicago. Previously did it for the New York Giants for several seasons. Additionally, he's the lead boxing announcer for MSG Network until 1993. In 89, he won the Sam Taub Award for Excellence in Boxing Broadcast Journalism, which will be good because I want to see if he actually saw what happened to Larry Merchant last night.
Okay.
He also was the public address announcer for the New York Cosmos during their run at Giant Stadium in the late 70s and 80s. His call, It's a Cosmos Goal, predated and could be considered as the basis of his trademark power play call. More importantly than all of that, that whenever I'm at the Garden and it goes to video replay, I know from my seat in 304, all I need to do is turn my head to the left, look up to Sam and Joe, giving the thumbs up or thumbs down, and I know before anybody else whether it's a goal or not.
Okay.
So it's our thrill to welcome you to Sports Talk New York tonight. Sam, welcome.
Thank you very much. I don't know if that's a book or a resume, or I'm glad. I mean, if I was looking for a job, that would be pretty good, but thankfully I'm not. But thanks very much. That's a great introduction.
Yeah.
I think it captures most everything, and I can honestly say every one of those things that you mentioned, I enjoy doing.
Now, I know, now this is interesting because it wasn't even in this open, because I know that you were a pretty good baseball player in high school and played college baseball as well. And the fact that you've done so many sports, and baseball may be, in fact, the one sport that people don't really ever associate Sam Rosen with, that kind of strikes me as odd. We spoke to Jiggs McDonald about his time as a Mets announcer for Sports Channel, and he looks back at that time fondly. So I guess the question is, did you ever think of being a baseball play-by-play guy?
Yes. The answer to that is yes, absolutely. And I'll tell you the story. I mean, obviously, you know, when you get into the business, you follow the opportunities. And my opportunities led me to football in the New York area in preseason with the Giants and the Jets, when they were on Channel 11 WPIX in the late 70s, ESPN, when they first went on the air in September of 1979, I went on the air doing college football with them. It's where the opportunities take you. And when I was hired by Madison Square Garden, initially I was hired as Marv Albert's backup on Knicks basketball on the radio, and then that turned into Jim Gordon's backup on TV on Rangers hockey, and eventually Jim passed the torch to me, and I followed him in the TV booth with Rangers hockey. So it's where the opportunity presents itself. When I was with ESPN, I did do five seasons of college baseball. I did the College World Series from 1984 through 1988 and saw some of the great players, Rafael Palmeiro and Will Clark and Pete Incaviglia and Bobby Thigpen and guys like that, Jack McDowell, Mike Mussina was in the College World Series. I saw Barry Bonds play at Arizona State. So I did do some college baseball. When MSG got the Yankees in 1986. I think a couple of years went by, and I went upstairs. They were looking to make a change in their play-by-play for Yankees baseball, and the man in charge was Bob Gutkowski, and I went up to Bob and had an interview up there. And I said, Bob, you know, I love doing the Rangers. This has been great. I'm thrilled doing it. I'm not unhappy in any means, but I've always dreamt of doing Yankees baseball. And we talked about it and talked about the opportunity that had presented itself, and finally looked at me and said, you know, Sam, I can get other baseball announcers. I can't get another hockey announcer. And when he said that to me, I didn't have a response. I couldn't come back at him. And so I say, I understand what you're saying, Bob, and I'll keep on doing the Rangers. And I'm still doing the Rangers and happy about that. But the answer, the initial answer to your question, yeah, baseball, when you think of baseball as the national pastime, would I have loved the opportunity to do Yankees baseball? Of course. I grew up a Yankee fan, and they've been part of my sports enthusiasm and rooting interest, and I live and die with the Yankees every season. So I would have welcomed the opportunity, but it didn't present itself. And in the meantime, I've had a glorious run with the New York Rangers that I'll never complain about.
Now, before I get to my next question, this is a very good question in the chat room that accompanies the show that goes out there. People watching live have the opportunity to ask questions, you know, while we're here. And Chaim just asked a question. He says, how the hell do you call table tennis?
Table tennis. And you know what? There's another interesting story. This was years and years ago, early days of ESPN, when they were looking for programming, and some guy from St. Louis came and he was promoting a tournament between the U.S. and Korea, I believe. It was one of the Asian countries that was really good in table tennis. Basically, you try to call it almost like a tennis tournament, you know, a forehand smash or something like that. You can't describe every shot, but you kind of give some background and stories on the players and what the tournament's all about, the competition. It was at that time it was something on an international basis. It may have been leading up to an Olympic competition. And I think it was something where I got an opportunity to do it, and I took it quite honestly, and I still remember this to this day. I didn't get paid for it. The guy stiffed me. I never got paid for it. So it wasn't an ESPN event. I was supposed to get money from the promoter, and he never paid me.
Wow. See, it's sort of like doing play-by-play of pocket billiards or poker, whoever the people would do
that. Well, that's a lot quicker, though. I mean, I can't imagine the pace
of it. Or it's like doing bowling on the radio.
Yes.
Well, I once did Australian rules football from the studio.
Wow.
But basically that was as a host, and you kind of learn the rules. The most important thing is learn the rules of the game, know what's going on in the game, so you can be conversational about what's happening out there and try to explain it. And that's basically what I did with any event that I did, whether it was women's field hockey or Australian rules football or whatever. You learn the rules of the game and make sure when you go on the air you know what you're talking about.
Now, we've been very lucky over the last three and a half years that we've been doing this to have some of the great announcers of all on the show. Pete Van Wieren, Ernie Harwell, the late Ernie Harwell. Yeah. You know, Sam obviously is now another one included in that list. And one of the things we always found fascinating is the first opportunity to be a play-by-play guy. All those guys, including Ernie, who at that point was 90, could recall everything about the weather, the first game that he ever did play-by-play for. Do you remember the first event you called play-by-play for?
Well, the first... I'm trying to think back. Oh, boy. I mean, it's... The first event that I went on the air with, where it was a commercial event. I mean, I would go to games, and I would go and sit off on my own and record play-by-play. The first game I did for Madison Square Garden was a Knicks-Nets basketball game at Madison Square Garden. That was in February of 1977. But I'm trying to think of other play-by-play events that would have preceded that. And I'm thinking I did, when I was up in Connecticut, I may have done a basketball game at one of the stations that I worked at. I worked at two stations in Connecticut, WNAB and WICC Radio. And I may have done, I may have filled in on a basketball game in the early 70s then. So that could have been. But, you know, it's I can honestly say the first MSG event was the Knicks-Nets game of February of 1977.
How about the first hockey game you ever called?
Ooh, well, that was, quite honestly, that was a Rangers game, and that would have been, I believe it was the Rangers and the Atlanta Flames.
Wow.
And I filled in for Marv Albert, and I think what happened there was the first year I filled in for Marv on Knicks basketball, I did a handful of games. I think I did five games. The following season, I started off doing Knicks basketball, and they came to me and asked me if I could do hockey. And I said, sure. And they said, do you have any tapes? And I brought them tapes that I had done. I was working for the UPI radio network, which was a non-commercial radio network, and I would, after my shift on the air, I would go to the games and cover the games as a reporter. And during the game, I would go off to the side and I'd record a period of play-by-play into my tape recorder. So I had those tapes and I handed them a demo of my hockey tape. And they said, oh, this is great. And they started using me on hockey games as Marv's backup on radio. And the first game I did, I'd have to check the date on it. I have to go back in the files, but I think it was the Rangers and Atlanta Flames, and I think it was in the 78 season. I believe it was 78-79.
Wow. Now,
but I think it was early in, yeah, like somewhere in October or November of 1978.
Now, obviously, you're one of the most knowledgeable and thorough play-by-play personalities in hockey. You've been paired with some pretty good color guys. Hall of Famer Phil Esposito during your first full-time season in the booth, then former Ranger goaltender John J.D. Davidson at the start of the 86-87 season, and that would form a duo that would stay together for 20 years. It's interesting to note that both of those guys went on to have jobs as executives with teams in the NHL, so I guess it's only a matter of time before Joe Micheletti's a president of some team in the NHL.
That's what I tell these guys. I say, if you come and work with me, I'll get you a great job. By the time you're done, you'll have a fabulous job.
Now, all kidding aside, though, how does a play-by-play guy adjust to different styles? Obviously, Espo and JD and Joe all have different personalities and different styles. How long is there an adjustment period to get to know their different nuances and know when to, like, you know, stop talking because you know they're going to jump in?
I think there's a period of adjustment because you have to learn the strengths of each person and know what they're about and what they like to do in the booth. Now, with Espo, even though we were only together 2 years in play-by-play in the booth before he became the general manager, one thing you know about Phil, he has great personality. You want to have that on the air. He had great knowledge of the game, a great feel for the game. He could tell if a puck redirected an inch, oh, that had to touch somebody. Oh, that had to touch his skate. It had to touch the tip of his stick. He had a great feel. John Davidson, but let me go back to Phil. But one thing about Phil, he was not a nuts and bolts guy. He wouldn't go to the morning skates. He didn't like that. He felt uncomfortable at the morning skates. There were games I would say, Phil, you have to go to the morning skates. He said to me, why? I said, because you have to find out what the players are all about, who the players are. I said, don't worry about it. So we'd go on the air, and a guy would make a play, and I'd say, Bob Smith made that great play, and he's going, where did he come from, Sam? So my job was to make sure I knew, I realized I had to know the bios of every player and how he was acquired and where he came from, because Phil wouldn't know that. So I would have to throw that in. That would be something that was important. Now, with John Davidson, totally different approach. John was the ultimate, and he has always set the standard in hockey broadcasting, and is one of the greatest, in my opinion, in all of sports broadcasting as an analyst, because of his great preparation, his great knowledge of the game, and his ability to get information from players, coaches, general managers, upper management, ownership types. He had a phenomenal ability to relate to people on all levels, and he was the most prepared person you'd ever want to meet. He taught me about preparation. I used to think I prepared, but when I met John and started working with John, I understood this guy was watching games day and night, and he had his satellite dishes, his Canadian satellite dish, his U.S. satellite dish. The Canadian, by the way, that was a little shady deal, but I don't want to, badmouth John. But anyway, at the time, he had those dishes, so I realized I had to get a satellite dish to keep up with, so I could converse with him on the air about what was going on in other games, because I knew he was watching those games. He knew the players around the league. I had to know the players on an equal basis. So he, by being with him, I learned about preparation. Joe Micheletti, very similar to John in his preparation, his approach, meticulous in his notes and information about players and background. So you know that they're prepared, and you can throw anything at those guys and start up a conversation on an issue, on a player, on players on other teams, big picture things. You learn that about your partners in that way, and it really helps me as a broadcaster, because I'm ready for anything that happens.
That's interesting, because I look at that partnership with Sam and JD. I'm 51, so yeah. The only thing for me that comes close to that is the trio of Murphy, Kiner, okay. And,
as opposed to those who remember Jim Gordon and the big whistle.
Well, I remember them too. But yeah. But for me, see, the reason why I have such fond memories of the three, Kiner, Murphy, and Nelson, is that they were basically the only person I knew from the time I could listen, and we won a championship with.
Okay.
You now translate that to Sam and JD, 20 years. They spanned some kid that might have been 10 that was a Ranger fan to the time he was 20. Additionally, within that grouping is a Stanley Cup. The Stanley Cup, which Sam so aptly caught that June 14th, 1994 night, with this one will last a lifetime. You joined a group of famous play-by-play calls with that call. Going into that game, did you have a sense of what you were going to say? The Al Michaels call. That you have an opportunity of calling something extremely special. Going into that game, did you have something in your mind? Was it scripted? Because it didn't come off as scripted. I was at the game. I went home, obviously, and people still watch that tape over and over and over again. How did that call come about?
Well, I guess you could really go back to Game 5. And what happened was, as the Rangers went out to Vancouver after splitting the first two games at the Garden, won Games 3 and 4, and now we're up 3-1 coming back to the Garden. And New York City is rocking. Everybody is totally in anticipation of the Rangers winning Game 5 and winning the Stanley Cup. That's all everyone's talking about. They're ready to party. Where's the party going to be after the game? And as I prepared for Game 5, I started rolling things. You kind of roll things around. You don't script anything. You don't write anything down. You try to come up with something that will capture the moment. What will capture the moment? Well, you go into Game 5, the Rangers lose Game 5. And then we go out to Vancouver and lose Game 6. So throw everything out the window. Because now you could lose Game 7 and lose the Cup. So we're at the game, and I, again, preparing for Game 7, you roll things around as I drive into the game. And basically I'm thinking, I want to say something that is going to capture the fact that all the curses are over, 54 years, it's over, it's wiped out, and the Rangers have finally won the Cup. So we're getting down, and, you know, you watch the tape, but I watch the tape, and they're counting, and it's a one-goal game, and the nerves are there, and the Rangers clear the puck out. It's late, it's a little over a minute to go. They finally get the puck out of the zone. Vancouver was pressing them. They were pressing for that tying goal. Rangers clear the puck out, and I start to go into the fact that the curse of 54 years, and they blow it down for icing. Yep. Now they bring it back into the Rangers zone, another face-off, and here we go. Another face-off, and they face it off. Rangers clear the puck out, and again start to go into that wrap-up, just trying to build the moment, building up the fact that, you know, all the tears and all the frustrations and everything, and they blow it down for icing again. And now there's 1.6 seconds on the clock, and they drop the puck, and all I could come up with was, the waiting is over. There was something we said about have to wait. I don't know if John said something about having to wait. And finally, you know, I said the waiting is over, and the Rangers win the Stanley Cup. And in my mind, the one thing I could think of is that no matter what happens from now until through the rest of your lives, this one will last a lifetime. And I didn't mean it to sound like it's going to be the only cup, and I certainly hope they win a couple of more in my lifetime. But no matter what happens, that one cup, that cup that ended the drought, 54 years, that one would last a lifetime.
Absolutely. Now, before we turn our attention to the current Rangers and the upcoming season, I need to get to the root of your signature, one of your signature calls, aside from the waiting is over, and the genesis of this one. And there are two different stories. One is that it's a carryover from your Cosmos days, where you would say it's a Cosmos goal. And, you know, the other is that it started in 1984, and J.D., when he was following Phil Esposito's color man, said to you, "Sam, make it colorful, really colorful." And when the Rangers scored on a power play, supposedly in November of 94, you jumped out of your announcer seat and joyfully exclaimed, "It's a power play goal!" And John Davidson erupted into laughter, and you turned to him and said, "Is that good enough for you?" And from there on, you know, the story goes, that's the genesis. So which of those two is accurate?
Well, it's not the Cosmos goal. The Cosmos goal just... You know, it was one that was something where they wanted the PA announcer to be more than just just name the player who was on the field, or you know, the goals and assists. So we try to put a little more excitement into the game of soccer. It was at a time when soccer was still in the North American Soccer League in the early 80s was still trying to survive, so they wanted as much enthusiasm as we could offer. But that had nothing to do with the power play goal. Now, my recollection is that the story you just told about JD, that sounds great. I mean, and I'll buy that. If you want me to use it, I'll be happy to use it. But my recollection of what happened was the season where the Rangers led the National, I believe they led the league in power play goals with 111. And I'd have to go check it out in the guide and record book. But I think that was, was 85. I don't think it was 86, even though they went to the conference final. One of those years, 85 or 86, they scored 111 power play goals. And basically, what was happening was every time they went on the power play, it seemed like every time they went on the power play, they scored. And it got to a point where where I would just come out and say, one day I came out and said, it's a power play goal. Like, here's another one. And they kept on doing, it's a power play goal. And there's another one. And it kind of just kept on being something where I kept it alive and stayed with it. And power plays being what they are in the National Hockey League, being as important as they were, I always felt that it was something that we set apart. They scored a power play goal. But I would go back, and if I had the time, if I weren't on the air with you guys, I would, and I will when I get off, is just check the record book. It was either 85 or 86. Might have been 85, because it might have been still with Espo, where they scored 111 power play goals. And it just, as I said, it just seemed as if every time they went on the power play, they scored, and that's how it kind of came about.
That's got to be like one of those MSG Vault shows. You need to find that first instance.
But I love your story with JD. That's pretty good, too. I can use that as an alternate story.
All right, so now we can turn our attention to this current Ranger team, which now allows me for... number six.
Keep on changing jerseys.
Yeah, when we had Boost Boudreaux, I was able to wear my Minnesota Fighting Saints jersey and my Capitals jersey.
Now, tell me you're wearing your Hartford Whale jersey.
Now, because we're turning our attention to the current Rangers, I am now putting on, for those of you watching
jersey.
My Brad Richards Winter Classic number 19 jersey, so we can talk current New York Rangers.
Okay.
All right, so first off, did you get to see any of the Traverse tournament?
No, I was unable to go up to Traverse City. We're going to do a game Wednesday night up in Albany, which will be our first preseason game on MSG with the Rangers. We'll do another game in Philadelphia before the team heads off to Europe. In between, there's a game at Prudential Center, which the Devils will broadcast, Rangers and Devils. So there'll be three games before the Rangers head off to Europe. We'll cover the Europe trip from the studio. We'll get an international feed, and we'll be broadcasting out of the MSG studios. So there will be coverage of most of the games, the exhibition games, three of the four exhibition games in Europe, and then the two games that count toward the regular season against LA and Anaheim. Those will be on MSG. We'll be broadcasting from the studio. The feed will come live from Stockholm.
It's interesting to note that you look at this New York Ranger team, and I think this is probably the first time under Torts where I'm looking at this team, and I really don't see many openings. You take a look at on the offensive side, Fedotenko, Gabrick, Richards, Dubinsky, Stepan, Callie, Walski, and Anisimov, Zuccarello, Prust, Rupp, Boyle, and Avery. That's four lines and an extra forward. Which of these guys, I thought in before, I've seen some of the stories now on Walski, that he really was a bubble guy. But basically, the story is coming out that he's worked hard in the offseason with Gary Richards, who we know had tremendous success with Steven Stamkos. He's also working with Boyle's skating, coach. And he's impressed early as well. So I guess almost the guy looking at lines and trying to sort lines out, the odd man out, I look at, who might be the guy that dresses sporadically, might be Sean Avery. Do you see any real competition from any of the guys like Dale Weiss or any of those guys that we saw at the Travis, like a Ryan Bourque, having any shot at making the team?
No, when you talk about fellows like Bourque, I think those are young guys, and Christian Thomas would be another one probably need to play in the American League before they'll have the opportunity to play on the big club. I think there's always competition, and when guys come to training camp, you try to impress the coaches. You try to leave an impression as far as what you can do, that you may be ready, that you're attentive to details. Do what the coach wants you to do. If you can score goals, even better, like Christian Thomas, certainly in the future, they hope that he'll be an NHL goal scorer. Because, as you know, as we saw from last year, there are always call-ups. There are always injuries. Things happen. Trades could happen. But you have to be ready for that time when you're called up to the big club and can step in. And we had guys that came in last year that were ready to go. Derek Stepan won a job in training camp. Ryan McDonough was called up in January and never left. Michael Sauer struggled early to find his niche, got a chance, and got into the lineup and never got out of the lineup. So there are opportunities that present themselves. Competition is healthy for the team. You mentioned all those wingers. Yeah, they're out there, and they have to compete for a starting job. They're going to push each other, and that's a good thing. I think a fellow like Mike Rupp comes in. He obviously brings size to the lineup, which was missing after the unfortunate and untimely death of Derek Bugard. They need size, they need toughness, and Mike Rupp is a guy who's played on the championship team. He can play a little bit. So I think where Bugard, the coach, did not play him all that much, and then he was scratched, and then he got hurt. I think with Mike Rupp, you'll see him play a lot more. That will push other players. Brandon Prust has to push. Sean Avery has to push. Ruslan Fedotenko. So the competition is good. I like this Rangers team. I like the job that Glenn Sather did in putting it together, in keeping the core together. The one thing, when I walked into the room, we had an event, a 9/11 event a couple of days before the anniversary of 9/11 down at the World Trade Center, and 19 players were there. And I looked at the group and I said, you know, most of these guys are the same guys from last year. And that's a good thing because they grow together. There's a camaraderie. There's a chemistry. There's a bond. And that's a good thing. And the new Ranger is Brad Richards, Mike Rupp. That's great. They've added something there. But the fact that the core players, you think of Staal and Girardi, have been together for a few years now. Sauer and Ryan McDonough played together all of last year. Dubinsky's been here for a few years. Callahan, who's now the captain, has been here for a few years. Anisimov has been here for a few years. Boyle has now been here for 3 years. Prust and Avery. So these guys are now, they are legitimate New York Rangers. This is now a group that's together, and that it's an intangible that in crunch time and key spots will really help this group. And if Brad Richards provides that lift offensively that they are certainly hoping he will to Marion Gaborik, this is a team that has a chance to do some very good things. You mentioned Wojtek Volski. I would say at the end of last year, Volski's chances of being back with the Rangers were slim. And I don't think he even fit in their plans. I don't think he was any part of their plans for this year. I think he spent the offseason working very hard. He's come to camp in good shape. Now he has to prove to the coaching staff that he belongs in the top six forwards. And there's a change. He's got talent. Yeah. He's a young man at 25, but he's got to prove it on the ice.
I totally agree, and you know the things I've been reading and things we've seen look good. I mean, he seems to have got from Tort's exit interview at the end of the season last year, he got it. It's like a guy that we actually had on last week, a guy who had talent, but somehow that talent never translated to a very good NHL career. Now at 31 years old, he's in Europe, Enrico Fada, a similar player that had speed, good hands, but never put it together. And I think Wolski's got a higher ceiling than Rico did. On the defensive end, a couple of troubling things came out today. That Staal is still having issues from the hit from his brother last year. That clouds the defense a little bit. For me, the re-signing of Emminger also, you know, I don't know what the thought process is. I kind of see that Delzato, Valetenko, and maybe Erickson, you know, vying for that last position on D. What are your thoughts on the defensive end, and can the Rangers have a successful power play without that quote-unquote prototypical, you know, quarterback on the defensive end?
Well, I think all the players that you mentioned all have something to prove and all have motivation. Emminger is a fill-in guy, and I think he's adequate. He's got NHL skills. He's got some grit and some toughness to his game. And in the short term, I think he's a good fill-in guy. I don't know if you can play him all season long and count on him to be a regular, but I think he's a good fill-in guy, very reliable, can play right side, left side. So I think there's some value there. Valentenko is an unproven commodity, but we saw him last year. He's real solid. He's thick. He's got a certain bit of toughness to him. So he's one of those guys that maybe you might see him up and down, maybe here for a while. That's someone to keep an eye on. The guy in the long term that certainly they would like to make the team down the road is Dylan McIlrath, who was a first-round pick last year. Good young player who was the captain of the team in the Traverse City tournament, the rookie tournament, and is big, strong, tough, has improved his skating, and down the road could be a bright future star on the Rangers' defense. Marstall will certainly, injuries, that's something you hold your breath about. You know, we see what's happened to Mark Savard in Boston. He won't play this year. You just hope for the best. And that certainly is something that bears watching. But with McDonough, with Sauer, they've got good young players. Michael Delzato is a player with tremendous amount of talent. He did a great job in his rookie year. Last year, I think he lost his focus, and I think now he's got it back. And I think he understands what it will take. He too, has to prove it on the ice. He's got great offensive skills. I think, is now, after a couple of years in the league, understands what it means and what it takes to be a pro. And when he shows that to the coaches, there's a chance he could provide some of that offense that you talked about on the power play. The key guy will be Brad Richards. He will play the point on the power play, which he did in Tampa. He did in Dallas, and I think quite capably. He's a very good, outstanding passer, sees the ice very, very well, and I think he will be a key to being the quarterback on that power play. So, you know, there are certain players to watch. Certain players that have motivation and certain players that have to prove themselves to the coaching staff. But the fact is that there's a lot of good talent in camp, and that bodes well for the team.
Yeah, AJ will tell you I say this every year, but I'm very excited. And I've been saying this. I mean, we've had the opportunity to have every year. We have like it was the Wolf Pack and then the Whale. We have a Whale Night, and we have five or six guys over the last 3 years, and each of them have progressed nicely to the pros. Right. So I'm very excited because they have tons of great prospects. Over the course of your career as a Ranger announcer, and this will also segue into other question I did want to ask, you've had to deal with a lot of different coaching styles and post games, and Torts might be the most volatile of all those guys, you know, over the span of your career. Does that make it tough working sometimes the post game? And as a segue into that question, I don't know if you got to see the fight with Ortiz and Mayweather and what happened with Larry Merchant last night. So if you could comment on those two things.
Okay. The first thing, we'll take the boxing. I did see it on YouTube. I didn't see it live. I saw it. I looked at it this morning. And it's one of those things that's unfortunate. I think that Mayweather is one of those guys who is, you know, he feels he's the star of the show and that he can say whatever he wants. And maybe he's had some incidents with Larry Merchant in the past, and he hasn't liked the tone of the questions or the direction the question has taken. Larry, I've always had tremendous respect for, loves boxing, great passion for the sport, and asks direct questions. And I don't think Larry was out of line at all. I think Mayweather was totally out of line in what he said and how he said it. And, you know, you're supposed to be a champion. It would be nice to comport yourself with class and dignity as a champion. So, you know, now Larry's response, Larry being a guy who's been there so long, I think Larry feels at this point he can say just about whatever he wants, and rightfully so. He's earned that right. Now, I think the other thing that I saw, as Larry said a little bit later, that even if he were 50 years younger, there's probably no way he could have kicked Mayweather's ass. But I would say this for Larry. He is a professional with a great love of boxing, great knowledge of the sport, and he was in no way out of line. It was Mayweather who was totally out of line, and he needs to just, you know, stand up as a champion and be a man of class and have some pride in yourself and have some respect for Larry and the position he holds. HBO has helped make Mayweather a lot of money.
Yeah.
And he should understand that they put him on, they put his fights on. He should understand that. And Larry was not out of line in his questioning whatsoever. Now, getting back to John Tortorella, different coaching styles. Yeah, all coaches are different. And I, you know, the one thing we start with, what I mentioned before, is respect. I have respect for John Tortorella as a coach and a longtime coach and a successful coach and now the coach of the New York Rangers. I respect him and I respect his position. And I truly believe he respects me and my position, and understands. I think at times, you know, there's so much pressure, there's so much media attention, there are so many microphones, so many reporters, that at times John gets a little testy. And I don't think it's anything personal. I've never taken anything personally in that respect. Because I think I believe that he respects who I am and the job that I have to do. And I try to ask questions, and I've told this to John, and that is that I'm trying to ask questions that the fan watching would want to ask and wants an answer to. And it's nothing directed at him. I'm not trying to put him on the defensive, but people want to know what happened and why something happened, and only he has the answer to that. There are times that he chooses not to answer, and that's his right and privilege. I would like to believe that when you come out for a post-game interview, you understand that you're putting yourself out there and you should answer the questions posed as best as you can. Obviously, you don't want to give away certain information, but if you can answer questions of a situation that arose during the game, I think everyone appreciates that as professional reporters and as broadcasters as well.
It's interesting you say that, because like AJ and I had this conversation. Yeah. I've covered a couple of games there for Inside Hockey and got into the post game, which is covered by MSG. And at first, you know, if you don't have that relationship with him, you know that you could be one of those guys that's going to end up in YouTube as Torts having, you know, throwing F-bombs at you. And I told AJ, it was like one of my greatest experiences that, you know, he kind of looked at me, he goes, that's a great question, and answered and smiled. And it was like, I felt good. But it does make you up your game a little bit. So, but finally, in closing, you have another new partner in a different area. The NFL broadcast this season, and I'm not going to put my Jets jersey back on,
but
we know him well here.
Yeah,
we've had enough costume changes for the night, but we know him very well here in the New York area as Chad Pennington. He joins you in the booth this season. How is that working?
Now, can I interrupt you?
Absolutely.
I didn't use this opening in our first game, but I should. Maybe I should have, but I only found it out the day prior. His name is James Chadwick Pennington, and we should have called him Jimmy. The guys who know him back at Marshall called him Jimmy.
Wow. Okay.
So I should have called him Jimmy on the air, but I didn't.
That would have ended the relationship right then and there. Yeah, that's...
It sounds like it should be the third.
The third, right.
Well, you know, it is. His father is Jimmy.
There you go.
James, and his son is James. Oh, the middle names are different. One name is Cole. I forget, he's Chad. His son is Cole, and his dad, I just can't recall. But they all have those short middle names, and they all use the middle names.
They're all Jimmy, James, or Jimmy,
first name.
If they don't like Jimmy, why bother?
Right. That's funny, right. But how is that working out? And, you know, we know him from his time here in New York as a real quality guy. What does he bring to the table as a color commentator?
Good knowledge of the game. Really knows the game very well. Well-spoken, bright guy, and he didn't seem to be out of his element. I think all he needs is to do games. We did an audition tape for him back in May in the studio off a large monitor, and he handled that very well. Then we did a rehearsal game in August in Pittsburgh, and he did a nice job where we had a small broadcast booth that was totally glass enclosed down at the goal line, near one of the goal lines. So not exactly your ideal broadcast location, but he handled that very well. He's handled the on-camera as well. I think in the game we did last week, which was Carolina at Arizona, I think he was amazed by how much goes on a Sunday during a broadcast. Even he was amazed, but he handled it with very steady, a lot of poise. I think the one thing we talked about is trying to make sure he maintains his energy. I think as a player and as a quarterback and as a leader of your team, you try to keep that even keel. But I think what I'm trying to impress upon him is don't be afraid to get excited if you see a great play or something happens that's exciting. It's okay. You know, I think as a player, you want to make sure you stay have this flat line. But as a broadcaster, you can get excited, and I'm excitable, and I love that because I love the games. And when a great play happens, I want to convey people that I just saw something good. I hope you did too, and here's why. But I think Chad will do well. I think he wants to do this. I think his greatest test will come next year after his body is healed and he hasn't taken any hits from 300-pound linemen. And will he? And he sees what's going on around the NFL and guys getting contracts. Will he want to go back and play some more, or will he want to stay in the broadcast booth? I think his wife wants him to stay retired. It'll be interesting when Chad faces that decision sometime next year. He and I are doing right now are scheduled to do 7 games together, and I look forward to it because he's a really good guy. You guys know him. He had a very solid NFL career. He is very knowledgeable and easy to get along with. And I always judge by what I see on the field. When I saw players come off the practice field when we were out in Arizona and come up to him, Kerry Rhodes, Bonnie Holiday, and other guys that know him and come up to him, shake hands and talk to him, and coaches react to him because they know and respect what he did as a player, then I realize he's going to bring something. That's something he will bring to the table, the ability to bring information and respect from players and coaches.
Excellent, Sam. Sam, I'm a little bit worried because now my bucket list is dwindling. I mean, over the course of 3 years,
your
guys always...
Your time is...
I'm
is
getting worried. My time might be coming. But, Sam, thank you so much for spending a tremendous amount of time with us tonight. I mean, we could talk to you for days. But thanks so much, and I look forward to seeing you at the Garden and really, truly looking forward to this Rangers season. And let's go Rangers.
I think it's going to be fun. I really do. I like the way things shape up, and if they have good luck with the injury situation, you always need luck. This is a team that could be a lot of fun to watch this season. Thanks for having me on, guys.
Our pleasure, okay, Sam. Bye. Have a great night.
Thanks.
Okay,
all right, bye. The great Sam Rosen.